You know, it's sort of, that was the idea of kind of community public service radio in that sense, which is has its value too, but it wasn't really community, you know, community rooted. It's these, like,
well, it's not what that, yeah, it's not what that radio station is going to be remembered for.
Exactly.
100 years from now. Like, it sounds to me like this is their legacy. This show is the most important thing.
Well, and it's making me think, I don't know if I know of any other radio show that has been on the air since 1941. So, I mean, this is potentially the longest running radio show.
Did you say it was still on the air?
Yeah, it's so the. And I could have and should have and would have wrote a letter, but a speed sign reached the streets is much better.
This is Joe Callis, formerly of the Human League and the Rizzillos, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra.
Hey, I'm Spike Priggin, host of the Bedazzled Radio Hour. Broadcast every week from 12:10 until 2 p.m. Wednesday afternoon, live from Spike's Record Rack, 400 Main Street in the Village of Catskill. Every Wednesday, I play pop, rock, soul, country, blues, reggae, and other obscurities, and once in a while, a hit or two. Please check out the Bedazzled Radio Hour with Spike Priggin on WGXC 90.7 FM, Accra, every Wednesday from 12:10 until 2.
WGXC programmer Matthew O'Neill has a record release show at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill on September 3rd at 8 p.m. His new album is called Connection. On the bill of the record release show is Morgan O'Kane opening and Otto Hauser playing DJ during the show. Again, that's Saturday, September 3rd at 8 to 11 p.m. at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill. And there'll also be a live WGXC.org web stream and a broadcast on 90.7 FM. So turn out or tune in for the Matthew O'Neill record release show, Saturday, September 3rd at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Judd Malton of Hillsdale, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You are listening to 90.7 FM WGXC, the local hangout of the airwaves in Greene and Columbia counties.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Mid-Hudson News reports that Governor Kathy Hochul was in Ulster County September 1st for an update on the wildfires that have burned at least 270 acres since starting last week. She said the fires may burn themselves out and blamed them on climate change.
The DEC predicts that ultimately it will burn itself out. It may take a week, it may take 2 weeks, but we don't expect it to be able to threaten any life or structure. We have to expect the unexpected, because the unexpected has now become the norm. That is our reality. That is our reality. And anyone who denies that, just come to New York. Let me show you how our state has changed so dramatically. Ask the farmers how different it is for them with their crops. Ask anyone in the tourism industry, places up on Lake Ontario, that had a 100-year flood in 2017 and another 100-year flood in 2019. I made the observation, doesn't someone owe us 98 years in between these? So the 500-year event we had in New York City, the 100-year events we're seeing upstate, with flooding in our Great Lakes all the way to our rivers and valleys here in the Catskills, this is the world we're dealing with. It's harsh.
Read the full story at Mid-Hudson News. Andrea Mako reports for Porcupine Soup that Columbia Memorial Health employees again made a point about the hospital's staff shortages with a protest in Hudson on September 1st. Hudson Mayor Kamal Johnson and State Senator Michelle Henchy joined hospital union employees asking for hiring more staff. Kim Gibson, a union organizer with 1199 SEIU United Healthcare Workers East, said, and I quote, "It is not unusual to hear the term staffing shortages in today's healthcare world. What is unusual here in Hudson at our local hospital is that the units and clinics have had to close for a day or days due to no staff," end quote. She said that currently there are 328 open positions at the hospital and its off-sites. She said, and I quote, "That's a large portion of the workforce," end quote. Last month, New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand wrote a letter to the hospital with a similar message. Gillibrand wrote, and I quote, "Due to low wages and high turnover, CMH is operating at a staff vacancy of more than 200 bargaining unit members. This extreme understaffing has caused the closure of beds and clinics, decreasing the availability of the already limited healthcare services in the area," end quote. CMH President and CEO J.P. Callahan agreed that, and I quote, there is a shortage of health care workers, end quote, but said the hospital is not to blame. Callahan said, and I quote, the union will attempt to identify this shortage as a local issue, but we know and can demonstrate that it is a national issue and one that is especially acute in upstate New York hospitals, end quote. Read the full story at Porcupine Soup. Rick Collin reports in the Times Union that hunting groups are criticizing Representative Elise Stefanik for a bill she's co-sponsoring that would repeal a decades-old excise tax on firearms. The gun tax funds wildlife conservation and other environmental protections. Caden MacArthur, the government relations representative for backcountry hunters and anglers, said, and I quote, there wasn't any consultation with sportsmen's or sportswomen's groups, end quote. The bill is more political theater than reality right now, as Democratic majorities in Congress are unlikely to pass the measure. Shortly after Democratic Representative Don Byers of Virginia introduced a bill to impose a 1,000% excise tax on assault-style weapons earlier this year, Republicans introduced the Repealing Excise Tax on Unalienable Rights Now Act. Stefanik said, and I quote, I am proud to join my colleagues in introducing legislation to eliminate this harmful tax that infringes on Americans' ability to exercise their Second Amendment rights. Make no mistake, I will not allow the government to tax the constitutional right of hardworking Americans by marking up the price to exercise one's Second Amendment rights, end quote. The tax dates back to 1937 and generates $18 million annually for New York State and more than $400 million since 1939 for a range of wildlife habitat protection and restoration efforts, as well as hunter safety programs. The Howl for Wildlife Group, the National Wildlife Federation, the National Wild Turkey Federation, and the Sportsmen's Alliance are among the groups in opposition to Stefanik on the issue. Stefanik represents the 21st Congressional District that will include Rensselaer County beginning next year. Read the full story in the Times Union. And that wraps up the WGXE News Update. You can visit our website for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXE sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXE Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
The confluence of race, class, and climate in Jackson, Mississippi's water crisis. Jackson, the state capital of Mississippi, has a population of over 150,000 people, more than 80% of whom are African American. Mississippi is the poorest state in the country. Jackson residents, already under a water boil notice for over a month, have now had no running water for days to drink, to bathe in, or to flush toilets. The Pearl River flooded following record rainfall, overwhelming the city's water treatment plant. On Sunday, Mayor Chokwe Antar Lumumba urged city residents,
if you are capable of getting out now, get out now. Get out as soon as possible.
Jackson has been paralyzed by the confluence of racism, classism, and the worsening climate catastrophe. On Tuesday, President Joe Biden declared an emergency for Jackson and surrounding Hinds County, promising federal funding to pay the bulk of disaster recovery costs for at least 90 days. A rented pump was put into service at the water facility on Wednesday and may help restore water service within a week. But that's only a temporary fix. Jackson's water problems run far deeper.
We are seeing the intentional divestment in communities that are led by black elected officials.
That's Jackson resident and social justice organizer Danielle Holmes talking to Reuters at a water distribution center this week.
This has been an issue for me since I came down here to Tougaloo College in 1991. I was always told not to drink that water. When I came here to Jackson, it was smelling like chlorine.
The climate-fueled polar vortex that descended on Texas in February of 2021, shutting down that state's electrical grid and subjecting millions of Texans to devastating cold, killing an estimated 700 people, also hit other southern states. Jackson's water treatment plant froze then, shutting off residents' access to water. Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves and Lieutenant Governor Delbert Hoseman, both white Republicans, blamed Jackson for that crisis. Governor Reeves told the press last year, "I do think it's really important that the city of Jackson start collecting their water bill payments before they start going and asking everyone else to pony up more money," he said. This is Jackson was in its third week without water.
The city of Jackson was not ill-prepared based on the winter storms. We were ill-equipped.
That's Mayor Chokwe Antar-Lumumba responding back then, speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour.
We've had resources stripped away from us.
Jackson was founded 200 years ago, named in honor of Andrew Jackson, a wealthy plantation owner who made a fortune using enslaved labor and who later, as the seventh president of the United States, orchestrated the ethnic cleansing of much of the South's indigenous population in what became known as the Trail of Tears. Union General William Tecumseh Sherman ordered the city burned to the ground during the Civil War. Later, the city of Jackson suffered some of the worst racial violence as Jim Crow laws disenfranchised African Americans across the South, and white supremacist terrorism waged by the Ku Klux Klan and others drove millions of blacks north in the Great Migration. In 1963, Medgar Evers, the NAACP's Mississippi field secretary, was assassinated outside his Jackson home. This followed the violence and arrest targeting hundreds of freedom riders who arrived in Jackson in the summer of 1961, challenging segregation of interstate travel. In 1964, three civil rights workers, James Chaney, Andrew Goodman, and Michael Schwerner, were murdered in nearby Neshoba County for helping the black community organize voter registration. Their bodies were buried in a dam being built on a farm to impound water that would have flowed into the Pearl River upstream from Jackson. On May 15, 1970, two students at Jackson State, the historically black college, were killed by local police during an anti-war protest. Their deaths received little attention compared to the four white protesters killed by the National Guard at Kent State University in Ohio 11 days earlier.
What we are experiencing now is literally just the crumbling of the empire's infrastructure. I think everybody needs to be clear about that.
That's Kali Okuna, co-founder of Cooperation Jackson, which promotes worker-owned co-ops and a solidarity economy, speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour.
It goes back to, I would argue, to the 1950s and 60s with the so-called urban renewal programs and the massive subsidization of the suburbs, which facilitated white flight out of many of these major cities, Jackson being one of them. And with that went major capital flight. And that has continued with very chronic programs of divestment and deindustrialization.
Kali Okuna heeded Mayor Lumumba's warning to flee the flooding this week and was in New Orleans remotely coordinating Cooperation Jackson's water distribution efforts. Repairing Jackson's infrastructure will take an estimated $2 billion. That's a tiny fraction of the public funds allocated by the recently enacted infrastructure and climate change bills. The resources exist to solve Jackson's current catastrophe. It'll take solidarity on a national level to overcome the triple ongoing impacts assaulting the citizens of Jackson, Mississippi: racism, classism, and the spiraling disaster of climate change. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
And now here is your WGXE weather update. Your forecast for the weekend. Well, on Saturday, it will be partly sunny with a temperature high near 85 degrees. Saturday night, mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 64 degrees. And on Sunday, a slight chance of showers, then a chance of showers and thunderstorms after 11 a.m. Otherwise, it will be partly sunny with a temperature high near 85 degrees. And Sunday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 61 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia Counties.
And your weekend Rip Van Winkle sandbar times will be on Saturday, surfacing from 1:30 a.m. to 4:30 a.m. and coming back again between 1 and 4 p.m. On Saturday, the current will be average. Sunday, sandbar appears 3 to 5 a.m. and again 3 to 5:30 p.m. Current on Sunday will be low. Looking way up, we see possible geomagnetic storms on Sunday as Earth enters a relatively dense plasma stream. Solar wind speed is currently 435 kilometers per second at 7.6 protons per milliliter. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 2, quiet. The current sunspot number is 67. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Nora E. Adelman of Athens, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
WGXC believes in creative use of the airwaves. WGXC is a program division of the nonprofit arts organization Wave Farm, based in Acre, New York. We are the only station in the country to dedicate significant airtime to radio as an artistic medium. Tune in to transmission art and experimental sound programming overnight and on Saturdays, and hear artists from all over the world who sculpt and compose with the airwaves.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC, hands-on listener-supported radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
Rehearsing and nursing a part, we know every card by heart. Overture, curtain lights, this is it. We'll hit the heights, and oh, what heights we'll hit. On with the show, this is it. Tonight, what heights we'll hit.
Thank you.
Next, we tune in the latest episode of the I Have Seen Niagara radio theater show from G. Lucas Crane and Rick Royer. The show airs Saturday mornings on the WGXC Morning Show between 9 and 10 a.m. and every early Wednesday night just after midnight.
In 1879, a small group of believers and practitioners of the new spiritualist movement journeyed to a destination a few miles south of Niagara Falls and founded the Community of Lilyville, a meeting place for mediums and metaphysical thought. Today, Lilyville is the oldest spiritualist community in America, and perhaps the world.
Many have come here lately, searching. They want to know where everyone went.
It was purposely settled as close to the Falls of Niagara as possible, believing the waterfall and the surrounding area held more than just natural power.
Jim. Some call him Big Jim because he's big. Or Big Psychic Jim because he is a big psychic. But his big clairvoyance has been blocked by grief. So he's come here seeking answers as to the whereabouts of his son, Little Psychic Jim. His boy went missing with hundreds of other aspiring psychics while on a psych hike in the Niagara Mountains. They sent in a dog to find them, but the dog went missing too. There have been several others visiting Lilyville, looking to locate loved ones who went missing on that same retreat. Some believe they were abducted by aliens. Some think they were swallowed by a landfill sinkhole in them hills made of trash. But most fear that the group of psychic water farmers who organized the retreat, a group known as the Sunflower Cult, has something to do with the mass disappearance. That's certainly what Annie believes. A nice couple that her and her husband used to hang out with, Soft Swap, also vanished. Maybe they are gone forever. Maybe they will come back someday, all weird and tripped out.
The founders and current inhabitants of Lilyville see the falls as a place of mystical significance, both haunted and protected by the most ancient of spirits.
Many are here in Lilyville, grieving, desperate, looking for answers. Here's one now, passing through the gates, street parking, grabbing her purse full of $10,000 that she's willing to exchange for contact, for peace of mind. How does it all work? This Lilyville industry.
Lilyville is not only known for their psychics, but they are also home of the world-famous Lilyville soft pretzels.
She asks where, she asks why again, and again, she needs answers. Her hand clenches other hand. She wants to hear him one more time, find closure. She bursts into a weep. Her foot taps, mechanically. The churning leg milks her grief into the unseen pseudo-alchemical chambers, working below.
Yes. This is the same Lilyville as the popular Lilyville soft pretzel chain, found in many rest stops along the East Coast.
Every drop of that grief is collected through a network of tubes, glass, and copper channels, terminating in bubbling beakers and fat-bellied iron vessels. The sobs, the moment of release, moaning, wailing, and all that waft from those in mourning, is pulled under the floorboards by hot vacuum filling tanks of longing and sorrow jars, some of the last known glass jars on the East Coast. It's oozing through clear glass, smoking back up in a miasma that helps the seer see, helps the mediums make out the shapes in the invisible, yielding air. Lilyville processed pain is the philosopher's stone of the mystics of this quaint little village.
In 1989, Marion Winfield of Lilyville started selling her unique soft pretzels on a roadside along a busy section of Route 33, and her salty, buttery, garlic-stuffed doughy knots were a hit.
Shelley is 83 years old. She's lived in Lilyville for the past 100 years, and she's still riding her bike through the streets every morning, dumping hot ash under the tombstones, washing the sacred stump. The look in her eye is alive, smelling of cardamom. Too viral. Ravishing is Shelley, with skin so youthful, blessed by the tears of joy and agony sucked out silently and mixed with the elixirs that moisturizes her skin, softens her dough. She parties. God, the parties here in Lilyville, all night. Hard and frisky.
Full swallow.
I should have settled with the Mormon lady.
Mr. Small, a medium, never catches cold, has a mood like a rainbow, and has helped people connect to those on the other side. Well, he himself will live the long life on this side, thanks to the captured grief sweat boiled in flasks, prepped to be exchanged for the power to hear the dead crystal clear. The hazy sizzle of a ghost touch, quick as a flash, might have said, I wait for thee, my lovely sister. Or was it, I'm watering my lovely toaster?
Her first Lilyville soft pretzel stand opened at the Angola Travel Plaza in 1991. And since then, 11 more stands have opened statewide and now include other flavors like salted caramel, jalapeno cheddar, and pizza.
A transformation takes place. An excess of pathos in one end, and magic out the other. Out the window, one can see the pet cemetery, where the locals bury their loyal animal companions and children under five. Into the blonde helmets go the gravity. Mothers mourning their dead kids, kids missing their dead folks. Lonely husbands and wives waiting for the message with open wounds, crying out to suture themselves with the stitches of a sign, a door, an assurance that the dead are at peace and joinable. It has a smell, a weight, and even a taste. Such things as a deep cup of regret and hot, fresh anguish, hotter than a pretzel straight out of the oven.
Back in July, there was nothing. And then actually days later, the stuffed animal appeared because last Christmas...
At an average reading, no less than a giant spirit can be contacted. Given the right dose of trap fumes, rising up from the reservoir of countless tears, waxing the faces of the bereaved with a lavender Vaseline, as if waiting for the pressing of a jelly death mask mold to be sold at a later point at the local ghost shop. Lilyville, neither sinister nor beneficent, neither scam nor bargain, a duty-free shop on the borders of life and death and science and spirit is all. Come, bring your deepest feelings. They shall be cooked, smoked, and snorted through old seance cones for stronger cuticles and clairvoyant skills. Here's another customer. Did you feel it? Did you see it? Want, saw, what, see, speak, you, wait, can't, what, tick you. A ripoff? No, not quite. The moisture is the message.
Another little known fact, microwaves are not allowed in the town of Lilyville.
And ultimately, the seekers are told what they want to hear. The psychic hikers will return. Drip, drip. They miss you and love you. Drop, drop. You will wake up someday soon and they will be there as if nothing happened. Plop. And there is some truth to it. The seers know. They will return. But in what form, they cannot tell.
Because I don't look on the internet to find, you know, that you can just go right to the internet, you can look, you know what beanie babies are? No, I mean, as a intuitive, you can't really see my room, right?
bartender, let's make it a double.
Thank you.
was Carl Stalling, Powerhouse, some of his 1950s cartoon scores.
On this audio buffet, we're tuning in Julia Kent's Temporal album. Julia Kent is a cellist who used to play in Rasputina, that are based in Kinderhook. Now she's solo, and Temporal is a 2019 release that just came out. We're going to hear a bit of it now. This first track is The Last Hour Story from Julia Kent.